Chapter 41. Being stimulated by these pricks and two words of irritation, Captain DeStancy might, I think, be better employed than in dangling at the heels of a lady who can well dispense with his company. And you might be better employed than in wasting your wages here. Wages a fit word for my money. May I ask you at what stage in the appearance of a man whose way of existence is unknown, his money ceases to be called wages, and begins to be called means? Somerset turned, and left him without replying, there following his receding figure with a look of ripe resentment, not less likely to vent itself in mischief from the want of moral ballast in him who emitted it. He then fixed a nettled and unsatisfied gaze upon the gaming rooms, and in another minute or two left the casino also. Dare and Somerset met no more that day. The latter returned to Nice by the evening train, and went straight to the hotel. He now thanked his fortune that he had not precipitately given up his room there, for a telegram from Paula awaited him. His hand almost trembled as he opened it, to read the following few short words, dated from the Grand Hotel, Genoa. Letter received. I'm glad to hear of your journey. We are not returning to Nice, but stay here a week. I direct this adventure. This tantalizing message, the first breaking of her recent silence, was saucy, almost cruel, in its dry frigidity. It led him to give up his idea of following at once to Genoa. That was what she obviously expected him to do, and it was possible that his non-arrival might draw a letter or message from her of a sweeter composition than this. That would at least be the effect of his tardiness, if she cared in the least for him. If she did not, he could bear the worst. The argument was good enough as far as it went, but, like many more, failed from the narrowness of its premises, the contingent intervention of Dare being entirely undreamt of. It was altogether a fatal miscalculation, which cost him dear. Passing by the telegraph office in the Rue Pont Neuf at an early hour the next morning, he saw Dare coming out from the door. It was Somerset's momentary impulse to thank Dare for the information given as to Paula's whereabouts, information which had now proved true. But Dare did not seem to appreciate his friendliness, and after a few words of studied civility the young man moved on. And well he might. 5 minutes before that time he had thrown open a gulf of treachery between himself and the architect which nothing in life could ever close. Before leaving the telegraph office, Dare had dispatched the following message to Paula direct, as a set-off against what he called Somerset's ingratitude for valuable information, though it was really the fruit of many passions, motives, and desires. G. Somerset, Nice, to Miss Power, Grand Hotel, Genoa. Have lost all at Monte Carlo. Have learned that Captain D. S. returns here tomorrow. Please send me £100 by him, and save me from disgrace. Will await him at 11 o'clock and 4, on the Pont Neuf. V. 5 hours after the dispatch of that telegram, Captain DeStancy was rattling along the coast railway of the Riviera from Genoa to Nice. He was returning to England by way of Marseille. But before turning northwards he had engaged to perform on Miss Power's account a peculiar and somewhat disagreeable duty. This was to place in Somerset's hands 125 napoleons which had been demanded from her by a message in Somerset's name. The money was in his pocket all in gold, in a canvas bag, tied up by Paula's own hands, which he had observed to tremble as she tied it. As he leaned in the corner of the carriage he was thinking over the events of the morning which had culminated in that liberal response. At 10 o'clock, before he had gone out from the hotel, where he had taken up his quarters, which was not the same as the one patronized by Paula and her friends, he had been summoned to her presence in a manner so unexpected, as to imply that something serious was in question. On entering her room, he had been struck by the absence of that saucy independence usually apparent in her bearing towards him. Notwithstanding the persistency with which he had hovered near her for the previous month, and gradually, by the position of his sister, and the favor of Paula's uncle in intercepting one of Somerset's letters and several of his telegrams, established himself as an intimate member of the traveling party. His entry, however, this time as always, had had the effect of a tonic, and it was quite with her customary self-possession that as he had told him of the object of her message. "You think of returning to Nice this afternoon?" she inquired. Destancy informed her that such was his intention, and asked if he could do anything for her there. Then, he remembered, as he had hesitated. "I have received a telegram," she said at length, and so she allowed to escape her bit by bit the information that her architect, whose name she seemed reluctant to utter, had traveled from England to Nice that week, partly to consult her, partly for a holiday trip, that he had gone on to Monte Carlo, had there lost his money, and got into difficulties, and had appealed to her to help him out of them by the immediate advance of some ready cash. "It was a sad case, an unexpected case," she murmured, with her eyes fixed on the window. Indeed, she could not comprehend it. To Destancy there appeared nothing so very extraordinary in Somerset's apparent fiasco, except in so far as that he should have applied to Paula for relief from his distresses instead of elsewhere. It was a self-humiliation which a lover would have avoided at all costs, he thought. Yet after a momentary reflection on his theory of Somerset's character, it seemed sufficiently natural that he should lean persistently on Paula, if only with a view of keeping himself linked to her memory, without thinking too profoundly of his own dignity. That the esteem in which as he had held Somerset up to that hour, suffered a tremendous blow by his apparent scrape, was clearly visible in her, reticent as she was. And Destancy, while pitying Somerset, thanked him in his mind for having gratuitously given a rival an advantage which that rival's attentions had never been able to gain of themselves. After a little further conversation, as he had said, "Since you are to be my messenger, I must tell you that I have decided to send the £100 asked for, and you will please to deliver them into no hands but his own." A curious little blush crept over her sobered face. Perhaps it was a blush of shame at the conduct of the young man in whom as he had of late been suspiciously interested, as she added, "He will be on the Pont Neuf at 4 this afternoon and again at 11 tomorrow. Can you meet him there?" "Certainly," Destancy replied. She then asked him, rather anxiously, how he could account for Mr. Somerset knowing that he, Captain Destancy, was about to return to Nice. Destancy informed her that he left word at the hotel of his intention to return, which was quite true. Moreover, there did not lurk in his mind at the moment of speaking the faintest suspicion that Somerset had seen there. She then tied the bag, and handed it to him, leaving him with a serene and impenetrable bearing, which he hoped for his own sake meant an acquired indifference to Somerset and his fortunes. Her sending the architect a sum of money which he could easily spare, might be set down to natural generosity towards a man with whom she was artistically cooperating for the improvement of her home. She came back to him again for a moment. "Could you possibly get there before 4 this afternoon?" she asked, and he informed her that he could just do so by leaving almost at once, which he was very willing to do, though by so forestalling his time he would lose the projected morning with her and the rest at the Palazzo Doria. "I may tell you that I shall not go to the Palazzo Doria either, if it is any consolation to you to know it," was her reply. "I shall sit indoors and think of you on your journey." The answer admitted of two translations, and conjectures thereon filled the gallant soldier's mind during the greater part of the journey. He arrived at the hotel they had all stayed at in succession about 6 hours after Somerset had left it for a little excursion to San Remo and its neighborhood, as a means of passing a few days till Paula should write again, to inquire why he had not come on. Destancy saw no one he knew, and in obedience to Paula's commands he promptly set off on foot for the Pont Neuf. Though opposed to the architect as a lover, Destancy felt for him as a poor devil in need of money, having had experiences of that sort himself, and he was really anxious that the needful supply entrusted to him should reach Somerset's hands. He was on the bridge 5 minutes before the hour, and when the clock struck a.h., and was laid on his shoulder. Turning, he beheld there. Knowing that the youth was loitering somewhere along the coast, for they had frequently met together on Destancy's previous visit, the latter merely said, "Don't bother me for the present, Willie, I have an engagement. You can see me at the hotel this evening. ... When you have given me £100, I will fly like a rocket, Captain," said the young gentleman. "I keep the appointment instead of the other man." Destancy looked hard at him. "How do you know about this?" he asked breathlessly. "I have seen him." Destancy took the young man by the two shoulders and gazed into his eyes. The scrutiny seemed not altogether to remove the suspicion which had suddenly started up in his mind. "My soul," he said, dropping his arms, "can this be true?" "What?" "You know." Dare shrugged his shoulders. "Are you going to hand over the money or no?" he said. "I am going to make inquiries," said Destancy, walking away with a vehement tread. "Captain, you are without natural affection," said Dare, walking by his side, in a tone which showed his fear that he had overestimated that emotion. "See what I have done for you. You have been my constant care and anxiety for I can't tell how long. I have stayed awake at night thinking how I might best give you a good start in the world by arranging this judicious marriage, when you have been sleeping as sound as a top with no cares upon your mind at all, and now I have got into a scrape as the most thoughtful of us may sometimes you go to make inquiries. I have promised the lady to whom this money belongs, whose generosity has been shamefully abused in some way, that I will deliver it into no hands but those of one man, and he has not yet appeared. I therefore go to find him." Dare laid his hand upon Destancy's arm. "Captain, we are both warm and punctilious on points of honor. This will come to a split between us, if we don't mind. So, not to bring matters to a crisis, lend me £10 here to enable me to get home, and I'll disappear." In a state bordering on distraction, eager to get the young man out of his sight before worse revelations should rise up between them, Destancy, without pausing in his walk, gave him the sum demanded. He soon reached the post office, where he inquired if a Mr. Somerset had left any directions for forwarding letters. It was just what Somerset had done. Destancy was told that Mr. Somerset had commanded that any letters should be sent on to him at the Hotel Victoria, San Remo. It was now evident that the scheme of getting money from Paula was either of Dare's invention, or that Somerset, ashamed of his first impulse, had abandoned it as speedily as it had been formed. Destancy turned and went out. Dare, in keeping with his promise, had vanished. Captain Destancy resolved to do nothing in the case till further events should enlighten him, beyond sending a line to Miss Power, to inform her that Somerset had not appeared, and that he therefore retained the money for further instructions. Book the Fifth. Destancy and Paula. Miss Power was reclining on a red velvet couch in the bedroom of an old-fashioned red hotel at Strasbourg, and her friend Miss Destancy was sitting by a window of the same apartment. They were both rather wearied by a long journey of the previous day. The hotel overlooked the large open Kleberplatz, erect in the midst of which the bronze statue of General Kleber received the rays of a warm sun that was powerless to brighten him. The whole square, with its people and vehicles going to and fro, as if they had plenty of time, was visible to Charlotte in her chair, but Paula from her horizontal position could see nothing below the level of the many dormered housetops on the opposite side of the Platz. After watching this upper story of the city for some time in silence, she asked Charlotte to hand her a binocular lying on the table, through which instrument she quietly regarded the distant roofs. "What strange and philosophical creatures storks are," apostrophe she said. "They give a taciturn, ghostly character to the whole town." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the birds were crossing and recrossing the field of the glass in their flight hither and thither between the Strasbourg chimneys, their sad gray forms sharply outlined against the sky, and their skinny legs showing beneath like the limbs of dead martyrs in Crivelli's emaciated imaginings. The indifference of these birds to all that was going on beneath them impressed her. To harmonize with their solemn and silent movements, the houses beneath should have been deserted, and grass growing in the streets. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.